Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
Corporate's telling us we need to do a prequel because our toy sales are plummeting. We don't want to leave you anxious, so here's how our origin story ends. This is how you should think about local electoralism.
I don't want to be a product of my environment. I want my environment to be a product of me.
What was your path towards political enlightenment? Did you always want to seize the means of production?
I don't know I had any real political inclinations. I grew up in a poor, upper poor, lower middle class family that didn't really participate in elections because I didn't really know how to. I think they voted. My parents may have voted in the presidential elections, but nothing was given to me or like no knowledge was passed down as to any belief systems. I think it may have been more of a conservative weirdo at first because I was really into the military and that stuff as a young child would be, you know.
Your macaroni art was
Tanks.
Cops and tanks and soldiers and helicopters.
But I always hated cops because I grew up in a poor area and cops were never good. So I always was left that way. I mean, hated, but fuck cops. Anyway, so that was my first radicalization, knowing that cops, no matter, I mean, I was young. Don't fuck with cops. Don't be around them. Run away. Nothing was ever passed down.
So as a child, you were generally apolitical. You understood certain concepts in your world, like cops, were not helpful to your personal material conditions.
Absolutely not. So as a kid, what were you? Because you know that I was a apolitical hunting weirdo. How did you start your life out?
I had a similar-ish upbringing. I never went through the pro-military phase. I never really cared about cops. They were just there, and I never wanted to interact with them and never really did for the most part. I was generally always pretty left, but I never really understood it at a formal level. I wanted to share, you know, for birthday snacks, you would bring in treats for everybody. Everybody would get them. You wouldn't signal anybody out. I was very inclusive, but I didn't have any real formal political anything until probably around the Iraq War, which I think is similar for you as well.
Yeah, the Iraq War, that was my most radicalizing moment.
And by Iraq War, I mean the war in Iraq.
The unlawful U.S. occupation of the country of Iraq.
In the early years of the 2000s.
Yes. The banning of the Ba'ath Party. What radicalized me the most about all of that is first calling bullshit on the weapons of mass destruction thing. Because there was so little information, but it was repeated so often. It just felt dirty. Nothing about it felt clean. That was about the time when I realized that this was all bullshit. It also happens to correspond at the time when I was more in tune to the news cycle because I was a shit lib Dem, more in tune to the world around me so I could begin to see the patterns of nonsense happening. I could also see the patterns against George Bush, but just the insanity that you're going to extrapolate out the 9/11 terrorist attack with people that had nothing to do with it was really radicalizing for me.
When 9/11 happened and subsequently the Iraq War, at the time of the invasion, did you understand that weapons of mass destruction were basically fabricated?
Yeah. The Colin Powell's nonsense UN speech they kept saying over and over again, which was two picture that made no fucking sense. Yeah, I knew it was all bullshit. I had some shitlib friends who were like cheering on the U.S. crossing the border and like, you know, invading Iraq and hitting them with the cruise missiles and all that stuff. But I don't know if you had a similar experience, but because if we both radicalized during the war, like, what was the point that you were like, you know what, this is bullshit. This doesn't make any sense.
So for me, it wasn't the Iraq War. It was certainly, I'm going to say, insightful, but I don't remember vividly watching any of the invasion or Colin Powell speech at the UN, which I've seen a million times since, where it was pretty obviously bullshit. I was completely unaware of all of that. And the Iraq War marched on for a couple years. And I remember looking back at George W. Bush's mission accomplished speech that happened like 60 or 90 days after the initial invasion.
Yes, like 16 minutes. Yeah.
And just going like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Like, they had to have known that it wasn't over then, but they did it anyway.
Yeah.
And the 2004 election was very bothersome to me in the outcome because I came to understand that Bush was a complete piece of shit. and was pretty well crushed that the nation voted for Bush again over Kerry, as terrible as Kerry might be or whatever. But Bush was just so terrible. And I just was like, what the hell? I just remember looking around and going like, what the fuck was this country thinking? We're in this complete shithole of a war that has effectively no end. The government is lying about the mission accomplished. And then as time bled forward, it became very obvious that the entire pretense of the war was bullshit. So I think you experienced it in real time, saying this is total bullshit going in. And I kind of figured it out as it was happening.
It was like this feeling of like, wow, this doesn't make any sense. And then the more CNN played it, the more it was like something triggered in my head going, this is all bullshit. I actually think I lost friends because of it. It's also the same time I tried joining the party, the Democratic Party, and been a shitlib, and that whole mentality of like, let's change it from the inside and let's bring energy. And you realize that it doesn't matter how much energy a person can bring, there's always going to be 80,000 times more retirees who don't give a fuck, who'd rather just see war and racism persist than actually make a change. So it was right at the time when like the Tea Party started taking over and the economy collapsed. I mean, I think the Tea Party, the economy collapsing, all of that with the Iraq war all together was just like, what the fuck is going on? I had no idea what's happening. I didn't know at the time how to define what I was thinking or doing because I had never heard or read or done anything with left theory. And most people have never, which is why it's so hard to talk about it. You said yours was gradual after the war, you know, after the war was going on for a while and you realized that, you know, maybe we shouldn't be in Iraq. Was there any other things happening around you that would have pushed you over the edge or at least solidified your thoughts and viewpoints?
Your discussion about the joining the party and then seeing all the old people around that just didn't give a fuck, that was effectively what my realization was during the 2004 outcome. Just looking around and going, how do people not care? There seems to have been a very clear choice. You could either vote for A or B, and there's actually more people that wanted Bush. And that was just an absolutely incomprehensible thought to me. And I didn't really know what to do with it, and it wasn't really actionable. And I shifted to just putting all my eggs in the Democrats will save us basket. And I remember being excited when the Dems won the House and the Senate in 2006.
Oh, I bet. I bet you were. So was I.
And going, wow, something will surely change now. And to some extent, it maybe did. But then the economy collapsed, like you said, which was a real problem that quite literally killed thousands of people through what we now call chronic violence.
Yep.
And that whole basically collapse playing out was another example of people voted for this.
They wanted this.
Of course it wasn't the Dems' fault, because they only had the House and the Senate, right?
Of course.
It was George Bush's fault. As time marched on, you saw the collapse get shittier and shittier. You saw these massive bank bailouts. I didn't really have a notion for what was going on with the bailouts, but it just never made sense that why are we bailing out the banks? They're the ones that caused this problem. That was perhaps my awakening to being able to say in real time that this shit is super fucked and doesn't make a lot of sense. And then we get to Obama.
Obama did this thing for me where he blew so much smoke up my ass for the hopes and dream. It actually pulled me more moderate or more support into the libs.
It was a pragmatic.
Yes. And I don't know if you felt this either, but when I realized he didn't actually give a shit about anything he talked about, like he wasn't, everything was exactly the same. Basically, it was Bush again, besides a little less harsh because he didn't have Cheney. About 2010, that was it. I'm done. That was when I went full tilt, kilt wear and lefty.
So before 2010, when you fully transitioned, were you active in electoralism? Did you vote?
Yeah, and I still am today. I don't put any of my eggs in electoralism, but yes, I was so into electoralism that I could tell you some of the coordinators who slept at people's houses that I knew for the Obama. Back when they didn't have like money, sleeping on couches, trying to coordinate. And then Obama kind of shit the bed in 2012. I was like, I guess. And I held my nose and worked for it. But that was because it was like, I didn't know what to do. And I think, and I'm not, maybe you can expand upon your side of it too, but I'm not sure a lot of leftists have this. There's a lot of support on the libertarian right wing side to be a libertarian. There's no support as a leftist. It is a very isolating and lonely place to be, especially because you can't tell the party you guys are fucking stupid. And then you lose all your friends. Like there is no real leftist groups. Don't even say the DSA. You go fuck yourself. There's no real leftist groups who are real leftists like there are libertarians who are real libertarians. libertarians, right? There are real libertarians who are like, fuck the government, I don't give a fuck.
We should have child labor.
Yeah, Rand Paul's of the world. I can't breathe because I have a rake in my lungs. Rand Paul. Real libertarians, and there's a support network for them, but there is not for leftists. And it was a very isolating time.
So as you're going through these various realizations, you're not really seeing other people that are expressing your general viewpoints, looking around going like, you see this asshole at the UN just fucking lying? Like, there's nobody to interact with and be like, yeah, I saw that too, and it's total bullshit. Because you go to the Dems meeting and they're like watching Oprah, and Oprah has, oh yeah, there's yellow cake over there and uranium and weapons of mass destruction, we have to go in, or whatever dumb expert she had on that basically just carried water for whatever the Bush ad wanted.
Yep.
That's the shitlib mentality that you're kind of mired in that you can't really get outside of. So throughout your entire life, I guess, have you ever voted for a Republican?
In a primary once I did.
So you strategically voted in a Republican primary.
When I thought that electoralism worked and I had a chance at national electoralism, which is bullshit. You have no chance at the national level. You have zero chance. Because people vote with their emotions, they do not vote with their head. And convincing 85% of the primary voters to come over and vote, you know, for the whole like Mitt Romney Trump mentality doesn't make any sense at all.
So did you participate in the primaries? Who were you supporting in the 2008 primary? What was your path? Were you paying attention?
I was not an Obama fan at first because I didn't think he had a chance because he was 2 years into the Senate, right?
Yeah, he was green.
So green that I was like, I don't know. So I was a Mr. Cover-Up fan because he reminded me of a Kennedy and he seemed good enough to go.
John Edwards.
John Edwards, yeah. Because I thought he had the most charm. Because that is when I realized at that point in time, that's the transitioning, right? Where I knew electoral politics at the national level was all about smiling. Like John Kerry was a robot, right? We know that. He couldn't smile without making you want to like...
close your eyes because the robot skin was showing.
Yeah, like turn inside out. But Bush had this alcoholic uncle vibe to him.
You could have a beer with him.
You knew he can get drunk and he'll say some really inappropriate shit, but at least he doesn't mean it. He's just having fun.
He was folksy.
Yeah, he was real folksy. You know, he could shit on your carpet, you wouldn't make him clean it up type of guy, right? He's just like a good dog. Like, you just can hang out with the guy. But Kerry, you're like, I don't need to be lectured.
Yeah, we know you like ketchup, but I don't need to hear about it.
We don't need your platitudes, even though Bush was just as rich and just as shitty, right? Kerry was this technocrat who had no emotions, and Bush at least stuttered through and crossed his eyes because he couldn't read the words, and people voted for him for some reason. I don't even know why.
Still doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. He could hardly read. He got like a C in his MBA, and you're like, oh, he has an MBA. It's like, I guess. I don't know. What do you call the lowest performing person in med school?
A doctor.
Like, okay, I guess I want the C student operating on my brain.
So you supported John Edwards in the primary.
Yeah, how about you? Oh, who did you go for?
I was initially on the Dennis Kucinich train.
I knew you were going to say Dennis Kucinich. Yeah, I actually, quite honestly, was for him, but I couldn't get a yard sign back when I thought yard signs worked.
And he got obliterated in Iowa, which I guess wasn't surprising. And the main reason that I cared about Dennis Kucinich was because he wrote the basically single-payer healthcare plan in the House around the 2006 period of time. He was also mashing on the door of Bush should be impeached. So he had some name rec based on that and some street cred with me. So Bush absolutely should have been impeached.
Absolutely.
And Dennis Kucinich was the guy that was reading in the House about articles of impeachment, and Nancy Pelosi was not caring. And then single-payer healthcare was the issue that I cared about. And we should have done single-payer in 2008. Kucinich lost in Iowa, so that got thrown away. Then I transitioned to John Edwards because his healthcare plan was, I guess,
not
maybe
shitty.
Better.
Yeah.
I have no recollection as to what it actually was. But then he decided he wanted to start paying his campaign aid while his wife died of cancer or something.
Super cool.
And that apparently tanked his campaign, even though it didn't take Trump's campaign, but I guess society has progressed. And then as it became the Hillary versus Obama spectacle, I was very firmly against Hillary and was generally pleased when Obama won the primary.
I was pretty pumped when he won the primary because he spoke gooder than other people did.
He was willing to lie to you about anything and everything, which
yeah,
we learned. And I think we both feel that we just got absolutely burned by his bullshit platitudes that the right tried to warn us about, right?
Well, the crazy part is that it was all bullshit platitudes, but the right made out on this. And I mean, we weren't wrong. I mean, for the first 2 years, I was wrong. But Obama I mean, year and a half. I worked hard on getting healthcare reform passed. Like that was my ticket into trying to become active locally for a national thing, like a national push. So we talk about acting locally, right? And on this podcast a lot. And so again, my transition to this was maybe I can make a difference if I get my local, you know, reps and local senators and everybody on board by getting petition signed and making phone calls and writing letters and getting on the news or whatever it happened to be, or got signs or something up. I don't know what it was. Going to a parade.
So you were basically compelled by Obama's hopes and dreams to get your local people that you could actually influence elected so they could carry out the hopes and dreams that Obama was pontificating on, basically.
Yeah, because he wasn't doing it. He didn't do anything.
And through this experience, you experience politics at the very local level. And was that eye-opening?
Fuck. Yeah, you know where this is going. Yeah, the national level know what they want to do. And the state level, people know what they want to do. The local is just like a fan fiction story about podunk hillbilly town, best friends running a town. Like, because local is just that. It's a popularity contest with name rec that nobody actually knows your name. And people vote on emotions no matter what the level is. You just hope that they vote emotionally for your name by the time they run out of gas at the local level. Because where did you get your local first mentality from, right? Because you got to, at some point, transition from electoralism, national electoralism, to a local only. As you were working and not really paying attention to the politics around you or active in politics, were you still voting?
I don't think I've missed an election except my very first eligible election where I got hosed over by absentee voting rules. I have voted consistently. I've never voted for a Republican my entire life. So I was very much engaged and aware of what was going on and who I wanted to vote for and what values I stood for and all that jazz. But I didn't really do a whole lot physically.
When did you realize that you should vote in the non-presidential elections? Like when you say every election, there are always like the weird school board and county elections. And
I always voted in all that shit too. And I wasn't necessarily informed, but I would always go and figure out the candidate. And I typically had some heuristic of, well, I'm going to vote for the younger person, or I'm going to vote for the person that has an email address, or
you had these rules. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like quite literally, I had some bias towards, I don't really know who these people are, but I think this person is like able to check their email. So I'm going to vote for them because they're marginally more competent based on whatever my rule set is. And I didn't know what it was, but I was sure to vote. And looking back, that was very clearly harmful because I wasn't making any marginally informed decision, but I was participating, and participating was important.
And how did you vote? And this question's awesome because I'll answer mine in a second, but how did you vote on things like tax increases, especially property tax increases?
So my heuristic, and it's kind of the same today even, is I don't have any problem paying more property taxes or more bonds or just paying more in taxes for anything. But it had to be something useful. So I generally would vote for it. So if they wanted to spend more money on improving the schools or something like that, I was like, hey, kids need better facilities. Let's vote for that. I'm fine with that. Whereas perhaps now my perspective is a little bit different and it's more guarded, I guess. Hey, let's get all kids laptops. And it's like, well, what kind of laptops? Oh, well, we're going to buy them like ThinkPads and they're going to be like $2,000 or some shit. I'm like, no, that's the dumbest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, technology does not increase academic performance. We know that.
So there's been a shift perhaps culturally in what do these tax increases actually pay for? And that shift I don't really like. But if we want to build bigger schools to have more classrooms to have a better student-teacher ratio, like I'm fine with that. And that was generally the pattern that I used and still do use. But I think the patterns of the referendums have changed to be more neoliberal than they used
yes.
to be.
Yes. There's a lot more outsourcing and reliant on third parties to do things for the schools instead of the schools doing it themselves. And that's where all of this technology comes in. And I agree with you. I don't care that you get all the kids get subscriptions to this online math game that nobody ever plays. It doesn't make any sense to me. I always vote yes for libraries if it's on the library thing, or yes for schools, or no on cops. Absolutely. I always vote no on cops. I don't care if they say things like, wow, we can't house prisoners here because our jail is too small or corrupt or broken. It's like, okay, then don't house prisoners. it's $200 for an ankle bracelet. Do that instead. Let them go back to work. Or not work, I don't care. But don't fucking put them in a jail for no reason. Anyways, fuck the police. So I always tend to vote that way. Even when I was younger and didn't, like, you know what the hell I was doing, it felt good to tax the rich. And then I realized that the only actual asset that the middle class in general has and owns is property. And I find it really fucked up that we rely on property value to determine the wealth of a neighborhood or wealth of society around you to fund things. So I tend to vote yes on everything except for cops.
So I voted very consistently for a long period of time, and I still do vote. And it didn't really occur to me to become active in a local capacity until after the Dems got wiped out in 2014 at the national level.
When you say wiped out, what does that mean to you?
So my perception, and I haven't gone back and looked at what actually happened, was that Obama wanted to do all these things, but he couldn't because he didn't have the House and the Senate. And they lost, I believe, the House and Senate in 2014.
Yep.
And by they, I mean the Dems. And I just remember thinking, how the fuck did this happen? And as I started to pay attention and the next 2016 cycle started, it was, wow, I should join the party. So I did.
And how was that?
Well, it was, I think, pretty similar to your experience, where it was revealed that everybody else that had joined the party was either 200 years old and completely clueless and out of touch, or generally just mad about how things were and didn't really have any clue as to how to do anything. And from my perspective, it wasn't very efficient or productive at all. And as time went by, it was more and more obvious that this is all just total waste of time and the party isn't going to save us. And sure enough, it didn't in 2016.
It did not. It did not. And you're spot on when it says, you know, people came to the party, A, thinking they can make changes, or B, because they needed something to do. And the people that think they can make changes always came with the mentality of being a shitlib, meaning they'll say stuff like, I think we should increase funding for rural or urban schools, whatever their constructs are. Okay, so we already have nice schools here. Should we bust them in? No, I don't think that we should share resources with people outside of the district. I think we should just pay more money to their district to make it better. It's like, well, their district is falling apart and failing, so why can't we share our resources here that have, you know, better schools and better utilities? Well, no, I don't want the poor kids coming to the school with my kids. I just want them to have better schools. And so it's like this mentality in which I do want to help them, but only if it doesn't affect me.
And you see it on a billion different issues. And you're really just sitting there going like, what the fuck? These are actual people with these stated positions, and it's not really possible to work with them. You talked about schools and sharing resources collectively. And to me, that was just a very basic thing that should absolutely happen. Why do we have districts that have odd shapes where you have schools right across the border and kids have to get bused 30 minutes away, but they can't go to the school across the street? Like, just stupid, dumb shit like that, that from a very basic scientific perspective has a known and obvious solution, but nobody wants to engage in it because that's not how we do things. See, we have a process, and this just commitment to the bureaucracy just drove me crazy. And the area in which it just destroyed me was on healthcare. And this loops back around to Obama's election and how he didn't do anything. Was like, why don't we have healthcare in 2014? You had a massive Dem majority in 2008, didn't do fucking anything. Harry Reid didn't abolish the filibuster. Like, the Dems lost over that 6-year period because they did nothing. And now I'm part of the party and all anybody around wants to do is nothing, which was the same thing that got us into this mess. And you're just looking around going like, you seeing this shit? And this loops back to the idea of there were no other leftists anywhere to look at and be like, you seeing this shit too? Because this is pretty fucked up.
Absolutely. No, that right there is almost a defeating feeling because you don't know what you're going to do next. And quite honestly, you know, you toy with the local leftists. There's nothing there. You look at things like the DSA or the Green Party, which isn't really left. They're just shit libs. You look for like Jacobin, shit lib rags. You look at Mother Jones, another shit lib rag. There's really nothing around, and I'm just saying mainstream stuff, that speaks to actual the left community. It speaks to the actual left community in a way that gives empowerment. Until us. Until right now. We're trying to empower you. We're trying to say that we've been through the cycle of radicalization, and it's tough, and it's sometimes lonely. But in the end, you come out on top.
So you mentioned the DSA and these various different media entities. But for the most part, they only exist in large metropolitan areas.
Yeah, they're basically bougie leftists, right? I mean, straight up.
And if you don't have any concept for what they are, you're not going to actively seek them out.
Nope.
I'm part of the Dem Party, and I'm going, this shit is super fucked. And there's not, like, writing in the sky that says, you should check out your local DSA chapter in the large city that you live nearby. That is not in any way, shape, or form active in the city that you currently reside in.
.com. Yep.
That is not a rational act. You have no knowledge that these entities even exist, let alone maybe do things that we generally perceive that they don't actually fucking do anything, knowing what we know now. But this idea that, oh, you should just join your DSA chapter. It's like, you don't even fucking know it exists. It does so little.
It does so little locally that you have no idea what they do. And then they have so little impact locally because they don't choose an actual doable thing. They don't have success. People like winners. They like news cycles. They like the idea that the local DSA cleaned the river or something silly like that, right? But guess what? They don't do that. They engage in electoral politics. They engage in, you know, electoralism that doesn't matter. They take claim for winning an award in Chicago and then later on don't do shit about it. They have weird breakups that ruin the Cincinnati chapter. I mean, it's just like the DSA is controlled opposition and it is stealing resources from the actual left, and it's sad. I think what it comes down to, it goes to your, you know, where do I look? And I said that earlier, I don't know what to go to. The chronically online left is just a bunch of half shit libs, half CIA agents.
And it wasn't a thing up until recently either.
Yes.
What were you going to do in 2006? You knew the war in Iraq was bullshit. What, like, you were going to subscribe to Mother Jones, right?
Yep, did. I did.
You did your duty, soldier.
I subscribed. I paid my $20 a month or $20 a year, and I got my six magazines.
Did you read it cover to cover? And you were able to regurgitate all the talking points?
Mother Jones has some really interesting investigative reports, which I agree with. They do a good job with the reporting on some of the, you know, really major issues when it comes to facts. The problem Mother Jones has is they can't, because they have corporate sponsors, they can't actually be a leftist rag. They say stuff like, you know, stop mountaintop coal removal processes because it's damaging the rivers. You go, okay, but what if we just stopped burning coal or seize the means of production and make them do it cleanly, right? Like all these, just there's other solutions just saying it's bad. And Mother Jones just stops there. We did an investigative report. West Virginia is doing mountaintop coal removal. It's bad. Okay, well, like, thanks. And you're left without, it's like a TED Talk. You thanks for all the facts, but you left with nothing to do. There's nothing you can do.
So 2006, you would read Mother Jones and go, yeah, we should absolutely stop mountaintop core removal.
Yeah, exactly.
And we absolutely should stop mountaintop core removal. But it was devoid of the follow-up next step, which we know now is, what if we just didn't have coal at all?
Yeah.
Why do we need coal at all? It walks you in kind of the right direction, but then it doesn't follow through, and it just leaves you kind of at the precipice of, where do I go next? And if you never see what's next, or you never see other people doing what's next, you don't really have any concept of what to actually do next.
Yep.
And that's largely where I think we both were within the party structure. So then we had this brilliant idea of running for office locally. And if you thought joining the party was radicalizing, actually running for office was an entirely different realm.
Running for office is an eye-opening experience that you should do, because you will peel back the secret society, which is local electoralism. And when I say secret society, I mean it is so weird. The bedfellows that you find, the people that are intermixed together, the way that politics are ran, it's, you think it's corrupt, it really is. In the weirdest ways, because you go after people, like, you go after endorsements from the weirdest groups that have actual power, like literal power, and you don't know why, but they do. We joke about, you know, like the Little League group, we joke about that. That's a real power structure. There is a literal Little League group in your city, and they probably have more power than you and your friends, and you don't know that. because they get first dibs on when they can rent the baseball fields. They get to say how money is probably spent. They get to do all types of things that you and your friends cannot do because they are a very powerful group, because they basically 30% of the population of the children sign up for it in the summertime. Think about that. Beyond school, there isn't really any other organizations that have that many kids running. And we say it jokingly, but we're absolutely 100% serious. Like churches, Little League, soccer, hockey, all the sports in general, anything where little kids are engaged, anything where retirees are engaged, have power.
And you can't know this until you run.
Yes.
It's quite literally unknowable because it's not publicized. Nobody is out there telling you that they have power. But when it comes time to vote and pick a candidate that they want, they have a self-interest in choosing who they want. And when they don't choose you, you know that they didn't choose you.
You know it right away. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the only really way that you know that these groups exist, is that they're not choosing you. They don't give a fuck what you think. There are even some groups that should be allied with the leftist cause that don't want to give you the time of day. And by this, we mean unions.
Absolutely. Unions are one of the craziest transactional groups in all of politics. They are purely transactional. They will support a member first, which that's what they should do, I guess. But they won't pick a candidate unless they think they're going to win, or it's a transactional piece there. And we're not talking about just like all the big unions. We're talking about like all the locals. Like all the locals, right? Local masons, local pipe fitters, whatever it is. They go to the hall together, right? You go to the temple together, and they make decisions on who they're going to support. Now, you get some factions into bigger cities that have bigger unions where one endorses the other, but most people don't have that. Most people have smaller union shops.
Like, think of a grocery store. A single grocery store probably has a union. Let's say your town has one grocery store, two or three. You're dealing with one or two or three unions. It's not this massive conglomerate of a powerful union structure.
You're talking like 60, 80 people, but guess what they have? They have messaging. They have money they can spend on elections, right? They have friends and families. They have a network of people that you don't have. They have email blasts. What you have to do is realize that everybody that you're trying to get an endorsement from has resources that you don't have. Primarily, email lists and money. The nonprofits have money. They have money.
And the key thing about all of this is that none of these institutions want to do anything that would disturb their current place of power. So unions would rather choose the person that is going to win but doesn't like them than take a risk on the person that doesn't win.
Because they don't want to lose favor, right? They'll choose a person that doesn't support prevailing wage because they don't want to get slapped in the face when it comes to another thing happening. They want the bid. Little League's not going to go against a sitting member because they know they get special treatment. The Chamber of Commerce isn't going to go out, going to give you the time of day unless you're already telling them you're going to approve all the permits. The Construction Alliance or Renters Alliance or all the pro-business alliances aren't going to give you time of day unless you are pro-business. The religion won't give you time of day unless you are religious. So it's a very, very interesting thing. And this is truly a radicalizing experience because you realize that even shitlibs will stab a leftist in the back to preserve power for a conservative.
And as a member of the party, that shit happened too.
Yes, literally happened.
So that brings us back to the start of the episode in which we told you how this was going to end.
The lesson on electoralism is this. You need to change your environment to reflect your values. Simply put, you can't personally hold the 15 offices that need to be held in your community, such as city council, county commission, or school board, drainage commission. The goal is to modify your community such that the people that win are the people that espouse your values.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.